All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm a member of the Public Service Commission. Our chair is at a funeral right now, and so is unable to participate, and I don't think he's calling in either.
No.
So, yeah. So we will carry on without his fearless leadership. Joining me is Commissioner Sherry Haugen-Hofford, and then we have a room full of people to talk about this, so appreciate everyone being here. I think we will go ahead and have staff introduce yourselves and the company, and then we'll go into the matters at hand.
Rob Frank, staff.
Brian Johnson, staff.
Victor Shook, staff.
Leif Clark, staff.
Way to go, Leif.
Do you want the whole room?
That's the question.
I don't think everybody needs to. Yeah, we'll just go with the folks who will participate in the meeting. All right, on the company.
Luke Schweitzer, Avangrid.
Jeff Rinkemeyer, Avangrid.
Okay. Tyler Glutt, Fredrickson and Byron.
Manuela Elizondo, Avangrid.
Could you repeat your name really? Manuela. Oh, beautiful. Okay, excellent. So we're gathered for the case number is PU 23-313. This is Rugby Wind LLC. It is a wind farm repowering project. And so we have the application. I know there's been some back and forth with staff, so I think I'll turn it over to Rob, who's our staff lead on this. Oh, did you want opening comments, Sherry?
not really opening comments, but just stating that this is an informal, and if we
don't... Oh, I usually do that at the end, but that's good.
Oh, go ahead.
Brandy always does that at the...
Oh,
at
okay.
The, but anyway, well, if anything that we speak about is disputed, then we'll end the informal and call a formal hearing. But I don't anticipate much of that. We're mostly going to be talking today about the issues. But if we do have a dispute, we'll have to close her down. All right.
Sounds good. Yeah, and I'm just going to turn it right over to the company to start their presentation. And we'll
all right.
From there.
Very good.
All right, great. Well, first of all, thank you for everyone taking the time here today. I'll skip ahead here. So, yeah, first of all, the Rugby Repower. We've gone over introductions, but we'll take a look from a high level at the facility and kind of its history and its past, also with the PSC. We'll go over the application certification amendments that were proposed, as well as just, you know, in a repower retrofitting process can take on many different actual ways in the field. So I'll go over the details of what we're proposing to do and how we'll do it. And wrap up with any questions. Ultimately, today, you know, Rugby Wind is here, you know, requesting that the commission amend the order and certificate for Rugby Repower, and we can get into those details. So taking a look in the past year, Rugby Wind received its North Dakota PSC certificate back in October 2005. Excuse me. Almost 4 years later, the commercial operation date went effective in December 2009. And then taking a look at Rugby Wind as it stands today, Avangrid, you know, we partner with 49 different local landowners in the area, encompassing just under 10,000 acres is what makes up the plant. And then, you know, Avangrid prides itself on being a strong member of the local community, takes on many different forms. But, you know, there's been over $3.5 million to date in taxes, helping to support local services, schools, and public safety, as well as then approximately $1.5 million paid out annually to the landowners. you know, ultimately, I know folks have questions. It's a 15-year-old project, why we would be repowering at this point. And it kind of comes down to an increase in the efficiency first. reliability improvements, from an O&M standpoint. The Suzlon, we can get into this, the Suzlon machines and turbines that are out there right now are becoming outdated. Parts are becoming much harder to come across. So there's a strong aspect of the reliability to improve with this. And then ultimately, at the end of the day, just the improved energy production. And that equates to more shared revenue, again, among the landowners. These leases are somewhat unique. You know, not all plants operate in this format, but the leases themselves are revenue-based payments. So that's another benefit that will be realized. And unfortunately, with the way that we're moving along here and trying to communicate things as quickly as we become aware of them, I believe staff has passed on the message here, but how, you know, the engineering logistics of how the nacelle is going to kind of marry, if you will, with the tower, that information is changing. As recently as Friday, this past Friday, we became aware that the adapter that will ultimately be required on the tower is not something that we knew about before. So there's details pending, and we are certainly aware that this will ultimately reflect in changes to the studies that have already been submitted to the PSC. And that is something that we are looking at, and we will hold off on until we know what that final answer will be. And then resubmit, you know, those studies which have, like I said, been submitted to date.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Just so the adapter has to be different. So can you indicate what studies you have to update now?
Yeah, correct. And it's a little small on the screen, but it will ultimately impact the setback analysis, the shadow flicker report, the sound or acoustic report, and then this is included here, but unrelated to the adapter itself. But within our certification, there is a change. The point of interconnection limit was reflected at 149, and that should be more accurately at 147. So a couple, there's a lot of information there, but to answer your question.
You're going down?
Correct, on the POI. That's what's already in there. It was.
That's what your interconnection.
Yes,
currently
it was
is.
Not.
It was just wrongly written.
Correct.
Stated. I see.
Correct.
Okay.
So that was the change.
And your interconnection is with who? Which system?
MISO. It's on the MISO system.
So the adapter makes it higher. Is that what it does?
It does. Yeah, and those facts aren't totally clear yet. It's somewhere in between 5 to 7 meters. But that's what we're waiting to confirm before we resubmit in January.
Okay. And what is the adapter?
Yeah, if I could skip ahead, actually.
Sure.
I'll come back to all this, but here's just a detailed sketch. So essentially, again, it's the, there's other pictures in here that can better explain it as well, but the full picture is the nacelle or the gearbox won't, like I said, fit on the existing tower the way that the OEM, the way that the manufacturer wants to see happen. So this adapter is what's going to translate better in that connection from existing tower to new replaced nacelle or gearbox.
Okay. Is it basically more tower that's added?
It is, yeah. Yep. It
and
is.
how do you attach it?
Yeah, that one I'd probably... Mark, do you want to speak to that at all?
Bolts?
Both? Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian, what'd you just say? Duct tape.
No, this is
like Gorilla tape.
On the detail, the bottom portion of that is what would bolt to the top of the current tower, of the existing tower, and then it adapts to the top portion, you know, which would actually bolt to the new nacelle.
I see.
I don't know if it's helpful to, here's another. Just for illustration purposes, the tower itself, where it connects with the nacelle, which is labeled there, is at issue. That's what the adapter.
So there'll be a piece of steel that fits on that.
Correct. Yeah. Obviously, we need to know. You know, there's a difference between 5 and 7 meters
right.
as it relates to these studies. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
All right. So I had skipped ahead. Actually, that's where I need to be now. So again, when, you know, repowers are a relatively new concept, I understand. But, you know, I understand that a few have taken place in North Dakota. I just want to be clear what Avangrid is talking about proposing as a part of this. So again, ultimately it will be a replacement of the nacelle of the turbine blades. With that, as I just mentioned, there will have to be a tower adapter. It's not, we hadn't been anticipating any change to the tower, so that is new. The generators themselves currently exist as 2.1 megawatt Suzlon models that will now be, it's proposed to be, 2.2 megawatt Vestas models. As part of engineering studies that have looked at feasibility, suitability of all this, we understand that we will need to reinforce the foundations, which will take the form of a foundation collar. Similar to the adapter, there's a detail drawing that we can take a look at. And ultimately, we know as it stands right now that there is some likelihood that we will need to upgrade and replace the underground collector lines, which are, you know, collecting the power and feeding back to the substation.
Why is that?
So primarily it's to reflect the change from the 2.1 to the 2.2 generators. That increase in generation at each turbine may require new lines to carry that additional power.
Okay, but your interconnection doesn't change, so help me understand how you manage that.
Yeah, we're limited. You know, we're limited to what we can put on a grid by the interconnection.
Mm-hmm.
And typically we'll basically optimize our site to operate within that limit. In some ways, it actually increases the efficiency, though, because you have more nameplate capacity of which to generate the 147.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna have a more optimal production because you have more to start with that you can put in.
Got it. So is that also why you're existing? You have 71 towers right now, but with that capacity, you might have less than 71 towers?
We'll have up to 71. That decision won't be based on the 2.1 versus 2.2. That's going to be more based on we do have a noise waiver that we need to get yet, and it will be dependent on whether we are successful with that.
Okay, so that's the determining factor.
Right.
Okay.
But if you wouldn't get that waiver, you wouldn't take that tower out of commission. You would leave it operating as it currently does.
That's correct.
Okay. So you're just saying for the repower purposes, you would repower up to 71.
That's correct. Right.
Okay. And then for collector lines, are you thinking you may have to replace all of them or likely just some of them?
A small fraction.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And would, if you were to replace any of them, you would abandon in place the existing collector lines?
That would be our intent, yeah. A lot of times you do more damage to the ground bringing it, you know, pulling the wire out.
Yep. Just wanted to confirm. Thank you.
And if we did, that replacement would take place in the same collector run, you know, easement location, kind of in kind. Just for additional color.
How have you communicated with your landowners or the people who have those easements and the possibility of the construction?
Sure.
The lines, but also just in general being out there changing all these tower pieces.
I would say the primary form of communication that's taken place with landowners so far has been in various forms. Primarily, the first would be communication about ongoing environmental survey work that's been taking place, just common courtesy notifications, you know, that Avangrid will have representatives out in the field. There's been a lot of engagement with landowners regarding noise waivers where needed. But as far as you know, larger discussion about a repower and the impacts of construction, that would take place at a landowner dinner that hasn't happened yet as we, you know, further de-risk the project and, you know, ideally get a permit in place and more, you know, security about that certainly would be a next step.
I got it. And do you plan on doing that this project, this construction season? Is that your goal?
I believe the target start of construction is in 2025.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And I have an additional question. When you're talking landowners, those are participating. How about those in the surrounding area that may be impacted by noise and all that? How do you include those in the area?
Yeah, those folks, as identified as being certainly impacted by any of the noise thresholds, or to be honest with you, even if they're close from a conservative standpoint, we have identified those folks and reached out to them. This was an effort, I don't remember offhand, but certainly kicked off late spring, kind of early summers is when we started engaging a lot of them.
How would you characterize the satisfaction of folks in the community? You've been there for 15 years now.
Yeah, Rugby's a well-supported plant by many of the landowners. There's a lot of it's a close-knit community, as you might imagine. The operations manager that's on site is born and raised in Rugby, as I know many of the other ops team members are. We've had great success with you know communicating what our plans are and receiving support of a refurbished plant. Right, I think a lot of folks understand again that revenue-based aspect to their leases, and of course many are very excited about that. So far, and we'll get into more of those details, but as far as the like noise waivers, for example, themselves go, we ultimately currently stand at needing 9 total identified through the modeling and studies that we've done. And as of today, we have 8 of the 9.
Did you know there's a lot of famous people from Rugby?
I did not, no. Go on. Inform
Some
me.
Some of them might even be in this room.
Oh, is that right?
Ta-da!
Okay.
Thanks, Jules. Go Panthers.
We were talking earlier as far as, I mean, it's a beautiful area. I had never been up there. My first visit up there, it's one of my favorite wind farms. I mean, I'm used to, flat Iowa wind farms and a lot of corn, just everything's the same. But, yeah, Rugby's a beautiful sight.
So this wind farm, when it was constructed, a lot of years ago, I'm assuming construction kind of practices have sort of changed. I'm looking at the footprint, which is 10,000 acres. Today we kind of launched a process for permitting a new facility that's 200 megawatts, that's more than double that many acres. It's 22,000 acres. So do you have any setback issues? Like, are your towers conforming to current setbacks in the state, setback requirements?
Yes, as they exist currently, yeah. And it's a good question, again, in connection with the adapter section of the tower. With the review of that, as we sit here today, we have to assume I was talking about the difference between the 5 and the 7 meter proposal. So we have to assume the 7 meters for conservative purposes. With review of that being proposed in consideration, there are 3 setback conflicts. 2 of them are public road right-of-way nature, and 1 is a conflict with a non-participant
property line or something.
Landowner, who consequently we've actually been working with for other reasons through the noise and flicker. So we know that they're in support.
Mm-hmm. Just to add to that point, as Luke here was saying with the 5 to 7 meter, most of these areas where we're in non-compliance were by 5, 8 feet. Mm-hmm. So that those 2 meters actually make a difference for us here. So as we get more information, we'll provide you up-to-date analyses and let you know if we do need those variances ultimately.
Right. I think that's everything covered on this slide. Maybe I glossed over a little bit the comparison of existing versus proposed conditions, but I think for the most part we discussed and touched on this. maybe just highlighting at a glance the tip height differences between existing and proposed. You can see here it's currently at 407 feet. Under proposed conditions, it would be up to 480 feet.
And is that with the at 7 foot or the 7 meter?
Correct.
Adapter.
Yeah, the up to 480 figure accounts for the conservative 7 meter adapter. So again, as we understand and confirm, those figures would all be finalized for you all. But this does also highlight the difference in the nameplate capacity being at 149.1 now, and understanding that, you know, in theory, the proposed nameplate would be 156.2. But again, to clarify, ultimately, there's no change in that POI limit. That export capacity would remain at 147.
I've noticed that nobody really is going back and trying to get just that small change in the increase. Does it trigger a whole new interconnection study and process?
It does trigger a new process. Oh. And it's time consuming. We've actually learned this on some of our other projects that we've done greenfield in other regions of the country, where if you oversize the nameplate capacity a little bit, you actually get better energy generation at the POI. You're more consistently closer to your POI limit. Mm. Yeah, you know, so we found that's actually not a bad business practice to do.
All right.
Good. So taking a look, at any proposed construction, again, all this proposed work, any activity under this project would take place within, the certificated facility footprint, that permitted boundary. When we talk about, what construction would look like with a repower, as you might imagine, it's going to be quite a bit different than any greenfield construction would be. Access roads, the infrastructure, the buildings, O&M, substation, transmission, that all exists out there already. With that said, access roads themselves would likely need to be improved to facilitate, construction and equipment delivery. Turning radius areas, so we're talking about anywhere from, any entrance to an access road from a public road or any access. If you might imagine that geometry of that turn as you're delivering these large turbine blades would need to be temporarily widened in order to facilitate that equipment delivery. Temporary, those would all be restored back to pre-existing conditions as they are today. Crane paths, turbine pad work areas, those would all be a consideration, obviously, to install this new equipment. As we've touched on previously, the collector system upgrades as needed. And then in addition, any, large wind construction activities like this is going to require temporary laydown yards and staging areas. Material storage, that's where, construction temporary trailers and construction offices would all be housed. Just also then wanted to highlight what won't be changed, where there won't be any permanent changes, the turbine locations themselves, again, the export capacity, roads as far as their locations and state. And then as well, the O&M building, the substation, ADLS system, as you're all well aware, is recently installed out at Rugby. And then ultimately, the transmission and gentile lines would not be changed.
Do you have to do anything with a LDS?
Yeah, so as it's been described to me, it would essentially be a software update. The equipment, the infrastructure, the tower that's already out there, it communicates well with the Suzlon models. So with, newer Vestas models, there would have to be essentially a software update to have them be able to communicate with the Vestas machines.
And are they located on the tower someplace? So you have to, take off the old one, put it on the new one, or not?
I
believe the part of the ADLS is on the nacelle portion of the sea line. Is that correct, Mark? Yeah, the lights are on the nacelle. Yeah, but the ADLS is basically a secondary. It's like a small radar, you know, that will communicate with the individual lights. You know, so the lights may have to be.
The lights have to be switched over. Yeah. All right.
No changes to the tower itself, the ADLS tower. That's correct.
So when you're doing, maybe you're going to get to this, but I'll ask now. When you take the blades, all the old components off, your application says that they'll be handled, processed, treated, stored, reused, disposed of, or recycled in accordance with federal, state, and local regulations. What's your plan for them?
Happy to do so. Hello. Yes. We did receive that comment letter from the DEQ, which kind of specified if there isn't an appropriate way to recycle, then you have to work directly with the DEQ for any type of landfill purposes. Our understanding right now, and we're currently in discussions and negotiations with not only our equipment manufacturer, but also contractors and who may be able to do work at the site, they do include recycling in their contracts or scope of work to date. That is the approach that we have agreed to with as Avangrid, a company. Granted, we won't know until boots are on the ground and we start working on everything, but the approach and the commitment we are trying to do as a company is to recycle. So we're just looking at the avenues available to us there.
Okay. Will you keep us up to date on that? Because I know there's a very broad definition of recycling.
Yes. we've heard that too. So we're happy to keep
you. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, so then I wanted to highlight any of the due diligence reviews that are currently underway or have been done, and again, may need updating. The sound analysis. To summarize, I think I already touched on this, but there are 9 different noise waivers that we have identified as needing for residences, within 100 feet of a 45 dBA impact. And again, we have 8 of the 9 currently. In an instance where, let's say, we can't get that remaining waiver, mitigative action, it could take form in a couple different ways. We would potentially look at maintaining, the currently existing sewage lines on site, potentially operating a new Vestas model at a lower mode, that would comply with the 45 dBA threshold. Whichever step to comply with that would be necessary.
Have you used those blades that have the, what are they called? They're serrated on the edges.
Serrated trailing edge technology.
What was that, Victor?
Serrated trailing edge technology.
Yeah. You can call it SDE. Yes, yeah, it's easier.
The turbines that are proposed for the site all have the SDEs on.
And have been modeled.
Good, but they're still higher.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, you don't anticipate the sound analysis to change from having that height differential added in?
No. No, we don't.
Oh, okay. But so you don't think there'll be more after that?
No. Sound's related to distance, and that's a three-dimensional thing. So I don't think there'll be a change. Theoretically, we're moving further away, though.
I will also note, we, having learned this on Friday, we worked together, and there were some preliminary analyses already done. So we have looked at the data, and to date, or based on that information, there is no increase in additional waivers or threshold issues.
And that's for the Flicker 2 or just sound?
Both. We've done both, yes. Okay.
Have you had any sound complaints out there?
Some communicated very recently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not really before today.
Okay. And with the larger blades, does that generally create more sound?
I think what we're looking at here is the Suze lines?
Small difference.
Yeah, okay, there is a small difference. However, the note is that when the project was approved previously, it was set at a 50 dB.
Right.
Yeah, and so a lot of this is just because of the 5 dB reduction, which, you know, we're trying to comply with. That's where the STE blades came in to reduce that as well.
Got it.
So then elsewhere, ongoing cultural and architectural resources, SHPO consultation, et cetera. Currently no known impacts anticipated with that. That is an ongoing study and consultation as we look at, you know, we ran into snowy conditions early in November when, as surveys were taking place. You can't, you know, survey for you know, a lot of those SHPO considerations under those conditions. So that's ongoing, as well as then needing to understand once we have a contractor on board and know where our crane paths are and those temporary impacts, that needs to be communicated through the SHPO consultation process as well.
Do you anticipate receiving a letter from them confirming that there's no significant sites affected, like with a new project?
Yeah, do you want to touch on that?
Yes. Yes, we do. that is the plan.
Okay.
I do something I did remember. When we did begin conversations with them, and I think this is something that's come up on previous repowers, not only archaeological but also architectural,
mm-hmm.
we have included architectural in our survey. So that's something that we will be coordinating directly with them.
Good.
Do you know if that was that done on the original application? Or I mean, that was a very early application,
yeah.
So it's possible it wasn't a requirement.
It was not a requirement for the original application.
Okay.
So you're probably doing the full 3 miles?
2 miles.
2 miles.
2 miles.
Mm-hmm. It was one, and we made it two.
It was for one for less than 400 feet in height and two for in excess of 400
okay.
feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
And most other wind farms that were built or permitted after this likely would have had that requirement, but since this one was prior to, I don't know what year it was.
We don't either. but we've included that, and I mean, we're looking at the potential impacts, if there are any, architectural issues in the area. Where we are currently located, we're 2 miles, we're nowhere near urban areas, so we're not necessarily going to be impacting downtowns or anything of that sort. If we do, it's going to be older architectural, like pole barns, that are deemed part of the NRHP eligibility. And so we'll continue coordination with SHPO and obtain concurrence prior to any ground disturbance.
I have one other thing. So it's not on that list there specifically, but the shadow flicker analysis, I was just kind of paging through that. So you kind of listed out there's a maximum, it looks like receptor 4 would have a maximum of 44 hours of shadow flicker per year.
That's right.
Are you anticipating getting a waiver from that receptor?
We have.
You have?
Yes.
Okay. And then one further request, if I could. So this analysis, generally there's a detailed analysis done on a per receptor ID of so that it'll show the maximum kind of worst case expected shadow flicker hours on the affected days per year. If we could just have that filed within the docket. It's helpful if we have issues with it in the future, just kind of having those details so we can just kind of have a quick, easy reference that on
absolutely.
You know, January 5th through the 20th, there will be so many worst-case minutes per year.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Recognize there's an absolute difference between astronomical worst-case and expected case, but just to have that worst-case view is helpful.
As we mentioned with sound, we did rerun the shadow flicker analysis. Preliminary, obviously, and there is still only one receptor that is over the 30 industry standard, and so we are still working with that same landowner that we worked with before, but we'll be happy to update the report when we do our final submittal sometime in January with that information.
Yep, and I'm fine with waiting until January. I just wanted to kind of note that if you would provide that full detail.
Regarding the sound... So currently, you guys, when you were permitted, it was 50 dBA. And then we subsequently changed the threshold, but existing facilities didn't have to do anything to meet the new standard. So in actuality, the folks out there would be experiencing probably a lower sound threshold because you're coming in at 45 for the whole thing. So that's – and those 5 decibels – is pretty substantial when you look at, you know, decibels being, you know, between when you get into the higher decibels, there's a big difference between numbers. So I think that's something that is noteworthy to mention to folks as you're doing this and will be a positive for the repower for the people living with it, especially if they're sensitive to the sound or notice it.
Thanks. That's a great point. Yeah, I think I'll steal the way you communicated that. So elsewhere, again, coming back to due diligence reviews through the DEQ, obviously we understand that undertaking like this with construction impacts will require, you know, your standard NPDES, construction stormwater, sediment erosion control, best management practices on site, restoring the site, again, to pre-existing conditions and vegetation. That's an undertaking that will take place, you know, closer to construction. And then again, the setback analysis, which again, as we've discussed here, is pending, you know, confirmed final data on the tower adapter details, and will be resubmitted.
Are there local setbacks in this area?
There are, and we are in compliance with all.
Okay.
It's unfortunately these. The roadway exclusion area and the non-participating occupied residents, where we're five to 8 feet in exceedance. So we're working through those.
Okay.
So in conclusion, from a commission standpoint, you know, again, here Rugby Wind is requesting that the commission amend the current order certificate to remove the 1.5 to 3.0 megawatt per turbine limitation, grant setback variances, if and when they're needed, and remove the overall 150 megawatt limitation. Certification will be in compliance with state statute pieces. The activities associated with the project are not going to impact any known exclusion or avoidance areas. Activities for construction are for the construction to improve the existing electric energy conversion facility known as the Rugby Wind Farm. And ultimately, Rugby Wind will comply with all applicable conditions and protections in the siting laws and rules. Again, on the tail end of this, as I had alluded to, we have, coming back to, if you'll recall, the conversation about the foundation collar needing to be shored up with this new equipment. This is a section, typical detailed drawing. If you can kind of see here, if I can work this, you can see the new bolts, you know, that will secure into this, call it this trapezoidal shape is the existing foundation. You know, new concrete will be poured in support around and again, drilled in, bolted in, again, for lack of a better word, to shore up the foundation. I also have this in a, I like the plan view myself, but that's a kind of an overview, bird's eye view down to of the foundation collar itself.
So there will be no expansion of the turbine pad. It's still something that is underground, and so you won't see it physically from where you're standing on the turbine pad.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like it's about 4 foot wide collar. How deep it was?
Your mic isn't on, Victor.
So how, it's about 4 foot wide collar, and then how deep is that collar? Is that another, it almost looks like it's roughly square, so is it about 3 or 4 foot deep and then 4 feet wide that you're pouring?
It's about 4 feet, yeah. Mark Mullen, it's about 4 foot deep as well.
Okay, so around the existing kind of bolt pattern around the base of the turbine, you would just pour an additional 4 foot wide by 4 foot deep around the outside of that.
That's right.
Just wanted to kind of get a mental image of that. So, thank you.
Have you guys done a repower like this before on these models?
We're pretty early on. We're pretty early on in repowers in the Midwest. I'm not sure if we've done collars in the West for other turbines at this point yet. Yeah, we have not yet. So, yeah, we're kind of like the industry, you know, this is pretty nascent, you know, starting to repower wind projects. So this will be one of the earlier ones for us in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen these any place, these collars? And
yeah, I have personally seen them in Minnesota. And it was established back in, this project I worked on was back in 2020, before I was working with Avangrid. So they've been established and they've been through other PUCs as well.
Proven.
Okay.
And again, the adapter section detail, and I believe that should, yeah, wrap up our presentation. So obviously happy to take further questions, and thank you.
On your road setback issues, are any of those major highways, or is it all gravel county roads, or some of each?
I know one is a gravel county road. I can't speak for the other one.
Okay.
Do you communicate with the local folks, the road crews, about that?
Yeah,
or
so
DOT or who?
I know Luke has began conversations with the local highway department. We're going to have a road use agreement, and so those types of conversations will be occurring in the next year before construction were to begin.
That's right. Yeah, it's been very preliminary conversations with county staff, as well as I had a call with the county commissioner in full support of, you know, the pending road use agreement.
Yeah. Who do you guys hire to do your repower work? Is it local folks? Do you have your own team and crews that you bring in?
Well, we generally work with with the general contractor. But then they'll go ahead, they'll farm out or subcontract to various subcontractors. Some may be local. That'll be more up to them. But typically earthwork and electric, that type of thing, will be done through subcontractors to the general contractor.
Is your general contractor a national group or somebody that you seek in state?
With all of our projects, we have a select number of more national level contractors just because of their breadth, and these are big projects, but they do typically they will work with subcontractors a lot of times on the local level.
Who's your operations manager in Rugby?
Mike Swingo. Hope I'm saying that last name right.
Did you go to prom with him? Sorry. All right. Are there any other questions from staff?
In talking to the company, then we would re-notice this in January is the plan at this point.
And re-notice it?
Mm-hmm. Considering that the height has changed, we would have to do a notice up to the 480 unless we have more information and it's solidified at that time.
But. Yeah. It might be worth, since you're not constructing until next year, getting all the studies and the SHPO and just wait till we have all of that so there's nothing pending and we have the complete record and can just move forward with everything. I might prefer that if you guys don't have any reason to want to do it differently.
My only concern would be with things like cultural and wetlands. Those do tend to shift my new pieces close to construction as we're micro-siting and better understanding where we can cross. So we won't necessarily have access to all that information till we're closer to construction period. Mm-hmm. And that would put us in a tighter time frame to receive your approvals, receive the SHPO concurrence, and then make sure we have everything lined up for
the supplies.
Yeah, so
supply chain stuff. Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
I have a question. When you guys originally built, based on the location and knowing that area, there's a lot of ag work, farming going on, and the roads are two-lane, a good travel road going up to the Peace Gardens and Menegoshi and all that. So how do you work around all that? Because we got some heavy, farming equipment is big, and looking at the construction site and all that, and not only tourism but ag going on.
Yeah, it's actually part of the road agreement discussion process with the local jurisdictions. Obviously need to be coordinating with local schools, with local, with landowners. While this project is a repower, it's not going to have the level of traffic, that a greenfield project does. It still has traffic and it will be an increase, in traffic in the local area during construction. So So it's a matter of, you know, it's a matter of communication with the local jurisdictions. It's a matter of signage, you know, making sure that you have the proper signage, you know, in and out of the areas, you know, just letting people know that they're in a construction area or a wind farm traffic area, and constant communication with the local jurisdictions.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
Real quick, procedurally, we talk about resubmitting. We intend on keeping the same case, and then we'll do an amended certification with updated studies. Is that your understanding of how we proceed?
I would say so, and I don't think since we're asking for an amendment, it should be an amendment request of the original order.
I envisioned amended certification that would attach all the updated and final studies in January.
Yes. But yeah, we could use the same case. Since
yeah. Just additional info. Updated
information.
Yep.
Correct. Yep.
All right. Anything else? Anybody? Sherry, you good?
I'm good.
All right. Then does anybody have any objections to the discussion today, the materials you provided being used to help us make a final decision?
Not at this time.
None from staff.
All right. Then that will all be added to the docket and will be part of the record, the official record on which we base our decision. With that, I think that we're concluded. Thank you all for being here and coming to beautiful North Dakota. And have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you. You too.